Thank you for listening to Dental Marketing Theory. I'm your host, Gary Bird. Today, I have two guests that I'm excited to share with you. Their names are Bill and Jared. They're from Duckett Ladd, and they're business and financial strategists for dentists. The thing I think you'll find most valuable in this podcast is where Bill and Jared dive into the financial journey that they take all of their dentists through. They bring a lot of momentum and a lot of clarity around some of the problems that you may be facing. Also, we get to discuss more money, more problems, and what you can do to protect yourself. Comment and subscribe to this podcast. It would really help us out, and I hope you enjoy the content. Thanks so much. Hey, good to have you guys on the show today. We got Jared and Bill. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great, man. Appreciate you having us.
Yeah, doing really well, Gary. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Excited to be on. And full disclosure, I was just on your guys' podcast yesterday. I know it wasn't released yet, but this is fun doing back-to-back and kind of getting to share our stories a little bit. Today, I really appreciate you guys being on, and I'm really excited about our audience to be able to hear about where you guys came from and how you've kind of worked up to the position that you're in. Will you guys mind sharing with me the story about how you jumped from being in the corporate world and then jumping into the entrepreneur world?
Yeah, I'll kind of jump in there because it starts with me. And I was what you would call corporate as far as accounting goes, Gary, which is a large firm, you know, top 10 firm in the nation. Started there out of school, and kind of like a lot of people, that's just the expectation is you're going to go to the place that, you know, pays you the most, that has the most what we call prestige. And, you know, I was lucky enough to get on with one of those groups, and it was a great spot, you know, a big place, met a lot of friends, you know, did really well, was kind of progressing in my career. Just got a call out of the blue from a really small firm from my hometown who was looking to expand into this area, which is in Southwest Missouri, and asked me if I'd be interested. And I guess you could say at that point, I was, you know, just married, did not have kids. So I was kind of at that perfect stage where we were dual income, no kids. If I was going to do something, it was time. If not, I was probably going to get the golden handcuff and I was going to be stuck. Probably like a lot of people go into corporate, you know, have that discussion too. You know, at some point, the pay just doesn't, it's hard to kind of break away from. So I was right at that tipping point, and I had just enough of an entrepreneurial bent that said, maybe if I'm going to try something, let's try it. Worst case, I'm going to bust my ass kind of as I leave out on good terms. And then if it fails, I'll just come back. I kind of had that safety net, and I felt very good about that. So I jumped out, came on board with this small firm, and you know that's a whole long story there. But you know, immediately I was kind of put in charge of an office when I'd never managed people. I'd never run payroll. So it kind of threw me into the entrepreneurial mix just right off the bat.
That's great. And then how did that getting thrown into the mix, where did that lead to? What were the next steps? What came after that?
So it's really interesting because I started out and I was 3 hours away from the home office, and this was in 2005. So, you know, technology was just different back then. You know, there really wasn't Zoom. There wasn't these platforms where you could interact. So, you know, it was a kind of you're on an island. So I was kind of thrown to an island, and the partners were good guys, but to be honest, they weren't very good businessmen. And so by default, I started out not being a very good businessman either. I inherited a couple of team members from the group that they bought out to bring me in on, and they were really bad. I hate to say that, sounds terrible, but they just were not the right fit. So my very first hire was an intern in college named Jared Duckett. And that was probably the best decision I ever made during that time period was bringing Jared on. So we were just thrust into the entrepreneur mix, and it was just kind of figure it out as you go. Kind of the looking backwards, it was such a backwards way to approach it, but that's all we knew at that point.
Yeah. And so what were some of the mistakes that you guys made along the way? That's an awesome story about how you guys met each other. And obviously it wasn't a perfect world. To your point, everything kind of rises and falls on leadership. So if you're with people who aren't as strong in business, obviously you're only going to be at that level. How did you kind of break that mold? What were some of the mistakes that you had to go through to get to the level where you're at now?
Well, there's more that we could recount, I mean, to be honest, and I'll kind of share a few. Then Jared, I know you have a few, but my first one was, I'll say this, when I made the initial jump, I really didn't have a vision in my head of what I was wanting. I just thought, well, this is something different. Well, you know, in hindsight, and this is what we try to tell dentists to do, is always, if you're going to be making a jump, try to visualize what you want that in-game to look like. So start off with really no basis of how this was things was going to work. It's just, we'll just jump in and start working and see. And so that was kind of a starting point. You know, we really, in our practice and with the other practice as well, we really didn't have any kind of vision. There was no purpose or mission. There was no core values. So there was really no guiding principles. So what happened was the people I was telling you about, Gary, who were bad hires, they stuck around because I didn't have the you know, guts to have a tough conversation. So it just kind of was this culmination of these little micro explosions that did not happen, led to this one massive explosion where, you know, all of a sudden you kind of have a mass exodus of these people who weren't there in a terrible way, a very unempathetic, you know, horrible leadership type way. You know, luckily for me, Jared had at that point had stepped in and was totally crushing it. And I knew that he was the future of where we wanted to go. And I actually had a guy ask me a question I thought was really awesome. You know, he said, hey, do you, when I was trying to decide what to do with these team members and Jared was there, he said, do you want to build a team with what you got or keep the team you got? Or do you want to build a team of Jared's? And that kind of crystallized in my head how important starting with the right team is. So those are just a few of the really simple foundational stuff. You know, Jared, as you're kind of looking maybe on the partnership side, you probably have some good insight there.
Yeah, I would love, Jared, to hear about how you felt, first of all, going through that negative environment, right? Which we've all been in, and I've created myself. So full disclosure, I've made bad environments before. What did it feel like to go through that? And then how did you come in and fix it? And then where did you start to see the light at the end of the tunnel?
It's funny now, just, I mean, that's almost 15 years ago, Bill. We're going back and thinking about this. But like Bill said, when I came in, I was an intern, you know, and was able to get in, worked hard and kind of worked my way up. And I'll never forget the day, you know, where I was offered partnership to buy in and be a partner with these individuals. And I go back to what you said, Bill. I was just excited at the opportunity. Kind of think about a dentist. They've got an office they can buy into. They're like, let's go. But I didn't know what I wanted that practice to look like, that firm. Now we're talking accounting firm to look like. I was just so ecstatic. I'm like, let's go. So I didn't really do, I'll just tell on myself. I didn't do a lot of due diligence, to be honest with you. I kind of just skimmed through it. Just, it's so funny me saying this because this is exactly what I tell dentists not to do today. Don't just jump on the opportunity. Do the due diligence first. I made the same mistake. And that's why I'm so passionate about what we do, is because I made that mistake. I just jumped in. I was so ecstatic. You know, and then when I got in and we started working, and I'm blessed to be able to work with this gentleman, Bill. I mean, he's kind of my mentor and has taught me most of the stuff I know, is what we didn't have. And I'll say this, Bill, you know, we talk about the four pillars of business, and it's leadership, team and talent, growth and growth with profitability, and then systems and processes. And I don't mean this in a bad way at all, but you know, a lot of times we say a bar stool has got those four legs, and it's a really good bar stool if all four of those things are sitting on the ground. I don't know if we had any of those in place.
You just had a cushion.
Or just no legs. A hard wooden top.
Yeah.
Not even a cushion.
Got it. Okay.
We just had no vision, no mission. That's, you know, missing the leadership. Team didn't come first. I hate to say it that way. Growth with profitability. We didn't know how to grow, what to grow. We just wanted to grow.
So what was that pivotal moment when it was just like, we're going the other direction like a speedboat?
Well, and I think this is why Jared and I will say we love talking to partners, because we are so passionate about it, because we have been with good partnerships like the one we have now, and we've been a part of rough partnerships. And I'm going to say these are good guys. These are good people. These were friends of ours. But we were part of this group. And I think you can relate to this, Gary, and I know a lot of the multi-practice owners can identify, where it was all about the meeting after the meeting. You know, it's all about, okay, we're going to have a staff meeting. We're going to come up and, you know, we'll talk about nonsense that makes no difference at all. We'll all laugh, and then we'll all go home, and then we'll all gripe about each other behind each other's backs, right? That's just how it went. And, you know, there was generational differences that were elephants in the room that there was no discussion around. And so it actually came to a point where we hired a consultant, an accounting consultant nationwide, to come in. And to be completely honest, he took a match and just blew the whole damn thing up. I mean, it was he just blew it up, and he knew he was doing it. I think he kind of enjoyed doing it. He kind of was smiling around like it was hilarious. We were like, oh my God, the world's ending. What's going on? He lit the match that he knew needed to be lit. And so from that point forward, we kind of all lawyered up. And you know, we stopped talking. We had three different offices, and everyone was an island. And it was kind of like, circle the wagons. We're still together, but we're not. And let's let the attorneys deal with it. So we shut off communication with our other partners. Another huge mistake. We were too cowardly. Is that the right word, Jared?
Yeah, probably.
To actually engage in meaningful dialogue about, we see the world differently. Does it make sense to be partners or not? And if not, how can we, in a good way, where our team and our clients are not harmed, move away from each other? It didn't happen. And it literally blew it up. So on May 1st of 2015, Jared and I finally formally got out of our old partnership and formed Duckett Ladd. And that's the inflection point, Gary. That's when everything changed.
It sounds like the beginning of a bad joke when accountants lawyer up against each other. You know there's going to be trouble. So, but that's awesome. And then it sounds negative, right? But the way I look at it is, you cannot succeed until you have some kind of failure. And usually, the more you fail, the more opportunities for success, as long as you're moving in the right direction, right? And as long as you're framing the failure in the right way, right, as a learning opportunity. And you guys definitely did, because in 2018 and 2021, you guys were now one of the best. So you were one of the worst places to work for, to your own account. And now you're one of the best places to work for. How does that feel? And then how did you get there? Because there's other people that are stuck in that, and it's not easy, but there is a process.
Yeah. You know, it feels great, to be honest with you. If you had the first part of your question, it feels great. I mean, that's, you know, our mission here is to strive every day to make the lives of our team members and clients better, team first. And if our team is saying, and that's the cool thing about the award, you know, they voted on it. They gave input, feedback, you know, that it was judged upon. They're saying they love working here, just tickles me to death, tickles us to death. So that's extremely exciting. I think what we did to really change it is, I'm going to go back to that bar stool, you know, and like you said, a cushion, I'll say we just had a wooden slab. We built the bar stool. We did. We built the bar stool with a very comfy top now, one leg at a time. And we worked on the leadership from the top down. We worked on the leadership comes first, down to the, you know, the team, and then the growth, strategic growth. That's the key. You know, I think strategic planning, what we're doing, what we do on an annual basis, is so key, that needs to be done in every single business. And then down to systems and processes, which is everything. I think now, by building that bar stool, has allowed us to have a really solid foundation to where it's just kind of point the bar stool where we want to go. And then our team, go back to the bus. Our bar stool is the bus. Now we got the bus pointing in the right direction and the right team members on the bus. I think that's what we've done.
Yeah. And I'll jump in and add a little flavor to that. I think it even started before that with me. I think my head wasn't right. You know, I had no proper framework for how I should look at the world. You call it a growth mindset, right? That's a very simple way to look at it. And I didn't. I remember graduating from school with my accounting degree, getting my CPA exam. I'm like, man, I'm done. I'll learn my trade and crap, but that's it. I'm not going to crack a book or do anything again, because I've done it. All I need to worry about is, did I do a good job at my work? And that's it. So I think that one of the first things that happened was, right away, we were just exposed to certain people who really just opened our mind to how to think differently and how to see the world differently. And it just kind of set us on this path of personal growth that it took me 38, 39 years to figure it out. And it drives me nuts. I hate that. I feel like there's so many wasted years there. If I would have had that perspective, and this is what I'm talking to college students or dental students or whomever, is don't stop growing. Just because you graduate, don't feel like that's the end. You know, that could be just the beginning. So that is one thing that really changed. And I think, Jared, you would agree, that's one thing that really set us to having these concepts of, how do we build something that is so 180 degrees different than where we were? And it did lead to the award that you mentioned. And yeah, I'd agree with Jared. I'm just very proud of that and proud of the team.
So, question, I'm going to change gears a little bit on you with you guys. When did you guys get into dental? When you're with your first partnership, were you guys in dental at that point? Or when did you transition into dental? And then how did you make that journey into being a dental expert when it came to the financing side of finances side of things?
Yeah. So we've always worked with dentists, and that's kind of the typical answer of a CPA because we worked with everybody, right? I mean, that was what we were. We were a generalist. So I would work with a dentist, then I'd work with an architect, then I'd work with a marketing company, and then so on and so forth. But we were never good at it. We just maybe kind of get their check stubbed or whatever and issue financials and see them once a year. It just, I mean, it wasn't really even what I would call working at this point. It was just doing a transaction with them, which is a tax return for the most part. And that was our old model. And that's a very common relationship people have with their accountant. I mean, it is a have to. So, you know, once we kind of started in our new journey, in our new entrepreneurial journey as Duckett Ladd, I think we learned pretty quick that in our profession, it's important that you niche out, that you do find something that you're not mediocre at, but the goal is to be world-class. Gary, that's something I think you are excellent at, is trying to become world-class in one lane. So with us, you know, we initially kind of hammered it down to two lanes, and one of them was real estate investors, and one was dentist. And dentists, simply because we like them. We're dentists are like accountants. I mean, we speak the same language. We're the ones wearing a suit coat. You know, you're talking about on our podcast about you wearing a hoodie and the rest of them are wearing suit coats. I guarantee an accountant will be wearing a suit coat too. That's just what we do, right? We're just kind of that. We speak the same language.
Everything's buttoned up.
Yeah. And number two is we just enjoy the industry. It's something that to us, it clicks. I mean, we can look at numbers and make sense of it and see, you know, how people are doing. So it was something we knew that we could pour into and we could find ways to really help guide our clients to better results. And it is an underserved industry in a lot of ways. So that was kind of our two lanes. And over time, we just kind of realized that real estate was something we did, but we weren't passionate about. Dentist was something we did and we were truly passionate about. So we've kind of slowly worked out of that niche. And now we're basically 100% focused on serving dentists. And that's been a great move for us.
Yeah. One thing there too, I'll just say is Gary, you said this, but a true entrepreneur or whatever always learns from their past mistakes. And we just kind of went through all the mistakes that we went through and what we've learned for it. And now we can turn around and we have passion because we've learned from it and made mistakes, and we can teach other dentists. They're going through the same journey. Go back to what I was saying, buying into an accounting firm, very similar to buying a practice or buying an interest in a practice. And it's all the same journey. And we've gone through it, the bar stool, we've built ours. We can help other people build theirs. So they're very similar occupations.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And it's in dentists are lucky to have people who are saying, hey, I want to learn this industry and I want to learn how to help you, right? And how to service this particular area. And that's huge. And honestly, like to your point, dentistry needs more of that. Definitely, for sure. Now, changing gears on you again, and you guys are the number guys. So I've been asking everybody this question from different angles. So I've approached it from the consultant angle. I've approached it from the HR angle. And I want to hear from you guys on the number side of things. So obviously in dentistry right now, salaries are going up, right? Inflation is going up. Obviously the insurance reimbursements are going down. Is the model that we're looking at right now for like a single practitioner, or maybe I own two or three practices, is it sustainable? And if not, like what needs to start changing to make it sustainable?
So we see a lot of sole practitioners. I mean, that's kind of where we're at in that space right now. And I think it can work. I think it is working. We are seeing people who are doing it well. And, you know, they're kind of kicking around that 50% overhead and they're making great money. And a lot of them are buying other practices. They're finding opportunities that are out there. Maybe organically, some of them are kind of evolving into more of a DSO type structure, you know, just because there's opportunities.
Or group practice, right? So they got right. Two or three and yeah, they made the model work.
Right, exactly. Group practice, exactly. So yeah, we're seeing it, but I think it's foolish to say that it's not tougher, you know, for just your run-of-the-mill average more practitioner than CEO, I guess is what you could say. They're getting squeezed in a lot of different directions. And right now, you know, we're having conversations that staffing is just horrible. I mean, it's so hard to find the right people. And that's where we come back to a lot of times, that if the culture's not right and that's not dialed in, then you're going to have problems with that. And those are the ones that I think are going to struggle. And I think they're going to have a long-term struggle if they can't dial in the culture and really get that to where they have that magnetic presence that's going to make people want to come to them. They will struggle.
So I just want to make sure we're on the same page here. And I had previous conversations with you on this particular topic, but I want everybody else to kind of hear it. So you guys are the number guys and you're saying, yeah, it's tougher on the number side, but you need to figure out your culture first.
Hands down. Yeah. You got to get the culture dialed in. That's going to attract people and keep people.
And just to help people who are listening to this, the reason for that is because you can get the numbers right and still lose everybody, right?
Yeah. And see, that's what I love what we do. And that's why we could be a very surface level advisor and just look at numbers and say, hey, that's off. But that's kind of a symptom, Gary. I mean, that's not the underlying issue. And that's something I've learned from you, kind of seeing how you operate too, you know, with some conversion and some of the metrics that you guys track. If there's underlying people or systems issues, then, you know, that number is just in red for, I mean, we could just say, well, it's red. Well, so what? You know, what do we do about it? How do we try to fix it? And a lot of times it comes down to the culture and the systems. And as number guys, we see that in our practice. And we did in the previous practice, a firm we were in. So to me, that's huge. And it starts there. And if you don't have that dialed in, it makes our jobs a whole lot tougher, just like it makes your job, Gary.
Way easier. Coming into an office that we are partnering with and they have a good culture, it's night and day. And coming into an organization that we're not partnering with, there's trust issues, both internally and externally, it just makes it really hard to do a good job. It makes it hard to get to what their goals are as well. So I love that we're on the same page with that. And I'm all about that, right? If everybody could get on the same page with this and start moving in this direction, it would make everybody's job easier, make better places to work, and more enjoyable for everybody to be able to enjoy this awesome industry. So let me ask you a question around COVID. So this is another question I've been asking everybody. What did COVID do for you guys in a positive way? Like I know COVID was super negative, but how did COVID impact you guys in a positive way?
Yeah, I'll jump in there real fast. I mean, you know, COVID, it caught everybody off guard, but I think what we did is it really accelerated our strategic plan in a way. I mean, we were moving a direction. I think it just forced us to get there a little quicker. I mean, automatically, boom. You know, we were a traditional accounting firm, brick and mortar, everybody underneath one roof, almost to a degree. And we all went home, right? And work remote for X amount of time. And now we're back. And we've created this flexibility now in our firm, in my opinion, that is just awesome. You know, I say maybe 50% of the team now is under one roof. The other 50% are at home or just traveling wherever and working. And that's what people want now. I think that's COVID just accelerated the flexibility and the gig type work environment that you don't have to work 8 to 5 in this building. You can work wherever, whenever, as long as you get the job done. And I think we were going that way, Bill, in my opinion. It just really accelerated us quicker.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I think so, team first and then client second. So then I'll take it from the client angle. I think for us, what it really did is it kind of reaffirmed why we do what we do. People were scared to death. Gary, you're like us, right? We're not a have to. We are, when you have no revenue coming in, potentially a luxury, right? So we were nervous too. We had kind of gone all in on advisory and consulting and realized that we could add the value. But if somebody's not able to make a living, then at some point you got to make those tough decisions about how do you lean up. So what it forced us to do is look at how we offer our services differently. And one thing I'm really proud of is we went from a model of, you know, what typically would be like a monthly financial review is that we would meet every single week with our accounts and just help however we could. Jared, build out cash flow management, whatever we could do to try to help them survive, because it's kind of like we're all in this together. And we can either kind of go home and watch Netflix, or we can actually try to roll up our sleeves and try to make the practice better so that when we come out on the other side, we're ready to roll. And that's what we've seen. It's crazy. I mean, we've seen people really have great rebounds after they got out of COVID, which is surprising. And, you know, we're hoping that that trend continues. But I think between what happened with the team and what happened with the clients, COVID actually turned out to be a little bit of a blessing for us on those two regards.
That's great. So one of the things I think that makes you guys unique is that you are taking a holistic approach to the business and saying, and being honest with people like, hey, you don't have systems. So driving profit is going to be really hard, right? And at the end of the day, that's why people want accountants, right? They want people to help solve their tax problems, help me make sure everything's coming through properly and that I'm actually looking at my numbers correctly. And so you guys come in and help with that, of course, and you help with a lot of other things. But I love the transparency that you give around, you know what, this is great. I'm going to be able to put this on a spreadsheet for you. But if all of your dental hygienists quit and don't want to work for you, good luck making money. You need to go fix this. And then you give them resources and point them in a direction that will be able to help them with that, whether it's marketing or consulting or whatever it may be. And one of the things that makes you unique is your you call it your dental momentum journey. And I know we could probably spend a lot of time on this, and I'm okay with this. I don't have a lot of other questions for you. I want to kind of work through that and get your guys' thought process on that. And again, I want to remind everybody, you're listening to accountants work through this. They've realized in their own business that they needed this to succeed. And then they realized, oh, every business needs this to succeed. And I've gone through that myself. Can you guys walk me through that? Pretend like I've never heard of it before and kind of share the six steps and walk us through how that works and how you tie this together for your clients.
Yeah, I'll jump in. And again, going back to the very beginning of our story, our conversation is this is a direct product of how we came through what we would call our entrepreneurial journey. And what we realized is there were so many steps that we just missed or missed the boat on, is probably a better way to put it. And so we kind of created this as we've been talking to dentists and trying to understand how they see the world and how they see business. So we created this six stage cycle that we would call an entrepreneurial journey. We call it the Duckett Lad Dental Momentum Journey. And, you know, really the way we look at it is it can start anywhere from day one of D1, and it tends to end when somebody exits their practice or their practices and moves on to the next, right? So the way we look at it is the first phase is very simple, and we're trying to answer a simple question, which is practice ownership right for me? Again, this was when I was at a bigger firm, trying to decide, is a smaller firm with a more entrepreneurial feel right for me? This is going to be somebody in dental school or somebody who's an associate who's trying to figure out, do I want to own a business? And guess what? It's not right. Gary, you know this. It's can be super rewarding, but it can be really tough. And so it's not for everybody. So really phase one is trying to build out products and services that help people understand and content that help them understand, is practice ownership right for me? Phase two is you're there. You're like, I know that this is what I want to do. I don't want to be an employee the rest of my life.
Real quick. So I love point one. Here's what I bump into. I see sometimes that people love dentistry, but they're not huge fans of the entrepreneur side of it, right? Or they love the entrepreneur side and they're not fans of the dentistry, right? And they find out later after they're already started, right? And so they're already knee deep in it. Do you guys have that come up? Is that something that you guys see?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that before. Exactly. I mean, what you're saying, and that does happen. And but I think the reason that happens is they skip, and that's why we're so passionate about the journey, they skip like the second phase here and the third phase. And they just automatically rush to, boom, out of dental school, work a little bit, boom, take down a practices. And they realize they got that entrepreneurial hat on. They're like, oh, crap, this sucks, you know, or vice versa. I think the answer to that, yeah, we do see it. And we can help coach them backwards a little bit in to make sure what makes the right sense for them. But if that's the benefit of the journey, is if they go through the journey in the correct phases, shouldn't have that issue.
It'll self-correct.
Yeah. Not to say that your mindset can't change, but it should self-correct itself.
Yeah. And we've seen at all levels. We've seen people who have been practicing for 20 years that just a little step, we're back to some foundational concepts. Their head's back in the game and they start rolling, you know, probably similar to what you see on the marketing side. So phase one, we've got to where, yes, we are interested. So phase two is, okay, I do want to own my own practice. This is a step most people skip, in our opinion, you know, at this kind of entry level, is what kind of practice do I want? You know, what do I want to do? Where do I want to be? Who do I want to work with? How big do I want to get? You know, all these kind of things that you could really start trying to vision out what you want in your life, in your career. Again, this is where I didn't do this when I went from a bigger firm to a smaller firm. I just said, hey, that's an opportunity. So if I would take just a few minutes to say, well, if I do this, what do I want to accomplish? And is it going to get me to my life goals? Is it going to help me support my family in a way that creates the balance I want? All those kind of questions that really most people skip over. So that tends to be somebody who's kind of just getting started on trying to figure this thing out. You know, it's practice ownership is right for me. So what kind of practice do I want? So then we move on to phase three. And most people skip straight to phase three. And this is, I've got a practice. Is this practice right for me? And so we tend to see people come to us a lot that say, hey, here's a practice I got. You know, can you kind of help me look at it and make sure it makes sense? Some people don't even do that. Some people just sign the dotted line, kind of like you did, Jared, without stopping to ask the right questions. And you know, a big question is it make sense financially? Is this practice going to provide cash flow that's going to support the lifestyle you want to live? And it's just simple, basic questions like that. You know, are you going to enjoy coming to work here? Is the team built? You know, what are we looking at in this practice individually that makes sense or does not? And again, most people come to us with a preconceived notion. We see it all the time that it doesn't matter what we say. I'm going to buy this one because I like it. I want it. I want it. I see it. I like it. I buy it. And then they're miserable. And that's where you kind of see people get stuck, just like you're saying, Gary, where they're frustrated.
What do you think it is with buying a practice that enamors people to make horrible decisions, like to literally put themselves in a position where they're not going to be profitable or they're going to be chained to the office all the time? What causes that?
I think a lot of times jump in, they have a scarcity mentality. I think they jump in and think, you know, hey, that's the only practice that I'm going to find, you know, and I'd be interested to see the statistics on how many individuals end up on the buying the first practice they see. I'm sure it's fairly high, to be honest with you, because it's just, it's human tendency, right? You don't want to lose a deal. You know, it's, you don't want to let one get away, but you have to do the due diligence to know that it's fine not to buy that one and have an abundance mentality that, yeah, there are other practices out there. And maybe 2 months from now, boom, this dentist over here is going to sell in the exact, and you know what? That one might have been better.
Yeah. There's literally hundreds of thousands of dental offices out there, right? Yeah. They're everywhere.
And not to mention too, that a lot of times they have existing relationships with the people selling. You know, they may be an associate in a practice and they like the guy. They say, hey, this is a great guy. I mean, I can't go back to him and negotiate, or I can't go back and tell him I'm not interested. So they just fall in love with it and think that's it. And again, we've seen it where we try to help them analyze it. In our minds, it doesn't make sense and they still pull the trigger because they want it. And you know, it's kind of like buying a car sometimes. If you get in your head, psychology kicks in and you pay for it. And then ultimately you may pay more for it later. You know what I mean?
Cars are easy to get out of, right?
Like That's right.
It's a, cars are trade it back in or, you know, wait a year, but dental practices aren't quite as easy as that. So yeah, definitely go through that process. I love this process that you're walking through. So I get phase one, phase two, phase three, then how do we start to move into phase four?
Okay. So phase one through three, you can look at before practice ownership. Phase four and five are really where we're trying to help people who own practices. And this is probably one of my biggest mistakes when I started the original firm I was with, is this is very foundational stuff. Is what do you need to set up as a now new business owner that will set you up for ultimate success or an optimized practice or multiple practices, group practice, whatever you want to call it, whatever your goals are, what's going to set you up to get there quickest? And it's almost like, how can we shrink the learning curve to get you to those goals? And so it's simple stuff. You know, this is where in my mind, where if you don't have any idea of what your purpose in life, your mission, your core values, what you believe in, if you don't have any of this stuff dialed in, then I think that's going to be one of those things that's going to lead to those frustration points that you're talking about. This is as simple as, what kind of financial reporting do I need to look at? What are some of the basic metrics I need to look at to try to make sure that I am going to be able to start growing this thing profitably? So it's really kind of getting down to the nuts and the bolts, the day-to-day. How are we going to set this thing up so we can propel ourselves as quickly as possible through this phase four, which is all foundational concepts, and get into phase five?
So those are core values, vision, mission, and your processes. Is that right?
Among other things. I mean, that's a sample. Those are some of the things that again, kind of to your point earlier, you have somebody who comes to us and they've been practicing for 20 years and they're frustrated and they're like, I don't even know if this is right for me. Most of the time, they don't have any of that.
So that's what I was actually going to ask you, is what percentage of dentists that you're talking to just don't have these things when you start talking to them?
High percentage. Again, I keep going back to the bar stool analogies. Phase four is building the bar stool or making it stronger, is how I see it. And a lot of dentists we talk to, they have a very weak bar stool and they just, they just are starting to run and try to get more profitable. Your bar still is not good yet.
Yeah. And then question. So what happens to a business? What's the difference in growth that they'll experience when they have these basic, just the core values, their vision of where they want to go written down, their processes in place of how they want to run their business? How fast do they grow compared to the dentist who have none of those things?
Well, and sometimes if you look at top line growth, it may not be much faster, but we don't care about that as much. We want to know, bottom line, are you taking home more? And see, that's the problem that tends to lead the most frustration. And I know you see this with people come to you, say, I just want new patients. And there's a funnel they're going through on the bottom, right? So, you know, what we tend to see is those people have kind of scaled up to an amount, but they're not bringing home any more and they're frustrated and they're just working harder, you know, to make less, or they may kind of stall out. But if you have the processes in place that really, in my mind, the number one thing it can do is help create systematic accountability for your team. That is what's going to help you grow both the top line and the bottom line in conjunction with each other. That's the kind of stuff that sets you up for multiple practices, group practices, so on and so forth. Those are kind of things that we, in our experience, that if you don't have those things in place, you are always going to see your numbers get out of whack. You may grow top line a little bit, but your bottom line is going to either grow marginally or shrink.
Yep, that's what I see.
You're going to grow, but you're not going to grow profitably, and you're not going to grow comfortably, meaning you're going to run around like a chicken with your head cut off and you're being more stressful.
Yeah, so there's more money, which means more problems. You have way more patients, so you're busier, and that means you're spread thin. And then you start to have culture breaks and things like that because people are overwhelmed. So people leave and you have turnover, and you're making less money because you're less profitable.
But yeah, you got more money, more team members, more patients, more problems. That's it. If you don't have the structure in place, it's just going to create problems.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So that's stage four. So we move from stage three to stage four. And then how do we transition into stage five?
So stage four, we hopefully have all of our foundational concepts, you know, and sometimes it's bringing people like you and Gary. Other times that kind of comes later on, but at least you have your systems, processes, your people, all that stuff styled. And you move on to phase five, which is how do we help grow profitably? And this is kind of, or how do we create more of an optimized type practice? And so this is where we historically have always loved serving our clients, because to me, this is the fun stuff. This is where we say, you know, we don't have to go back and bash our heads against the wall because your culture's terrible and your people are leaving all the time. We don't have to mess with that. We've got a lot of stuff, good things in place. So now what are the levers that we can pull? You got good process in place. How can we get you in front of Gary and his team so they can actually create manageable growth that makes sense? How can we find ways to take you from a one practice owner to bring on a partner in a way that is mutually beneficial, that makes sense? How can we take you from one practice to two, to three, to four, to five, so on and so forth? This is where, when we look at advisory and what we, at least me, I'm more passionate about this than probably anything else, is how do we help people grow profitably to scale in a way that makes sense and hits their strategic objectives? That's really how we look at phase five.
Yeah, well, it really allows us to live out our mission really through there. You know what I'm saying? Strive every day to make the lives of our team members, clients better. That phase five service adds so much value to that client. They're going to get better, achieve their goals. And that's really, truly what fires us up.
Awesome. Yes. And that's honestly, when people get all aligned together and everybody's pulling in the same direction, it really is magical, not just within the business, but with everybody else, the patients, the firms that they're working with, everything starts to click. And then phase six, a lot of people don't talk about this, but I know that this is something that you help with clients as well.
Yeah. So we're at phase five, and, you know, let's say it doesn't matter. They could be a single practice. They could have a group practice, whatever the case is. They're now ready to step away either from the chair or from the desk as a CEO, and they're ready to move on to next. And that's the beautiful thing about being an accountant that's also an advisor, is that we can kind of follow somebody and build out ways that we can work together all the way through to the end. And that tends to be more of a, okay, we set ourselves up well, we've got an exit, let's make sure the exit's done well, that it's done in a tax efficient way, that we've done everything we can to keep as much money in your pocket. Now you've got this money. What do you want to do with it? You know, do we want to go out? Do we want to start investing in real estate? What do we want to do to try to maintain our lifestyle? How can we help you make the best decisions you can so that you can start creating your legacy at that point. And we tend to see, again, this is obviously a little bit more of a tax driven model, but that's the beautiful thing about being a CPA is that, you know, we can kind of stick with somebody theoretically all the way from day one of D1 all the way to the end where we're actually helping them in their retirement. And to us, that's kind of a very fulfilling way to plug in.
That's great. It's the full cycle. And thank you so much for walking us through that. I know it takes a little bit of time, but I think that's what sets you guys apart from a lot of other individuals out there. And so a lot of value there. All right. Changing gears on you 180 degrees. What is your guys' favorite marketing campaign of all time?
Man, I'm going to have to go back. And you'll love this. Maybe you can get one on your shelf back there. But you're my generation, Gary. We never compared ages, but I think we're pretty close. Do you remember the Super Bowl back in the 80s where they would have the Bud Bowls? You remember that?
Yep.
So I was probably 8 or 9, probably last thing I should be super excited about. But I just thought those cans, like playing football together. You remember that Budweiser?
Yeah. So the thing that people don't realize back then, for all the younger people out there, and this is a warning to everybody, they used to market all the beer and all the cigarettes to the kids. Like, it was all kids stuff, if you guys remember that. So like, remember Joe Camel? Yeah. And all those kind of things. I used to get the Joe Bucks, and I was a little kid, but that has all been outlawed now. So yeah, I remember that. I remember that campaign clearly.
Yeah, that was always my favorite.
You've got me stumped, Gary. You've got me stumped. Come back to me. Go to the next question. I'll have to think on that one.
So I wanted to give you guys an opportunity. If people are thinking about, hey, I want some help with my finances, or I want help with my business, or I have some questions about how this relationship would work, how could people connect with you and find you?
Yeah, I'll jump in there. So the easiest way to get in contact with us is just go to our website, duckettlad.com. 2 T's, 2 D's on that. Just check out our content on YouTube as well. You know, and just start following us. But that's the easiest way to connect up with us.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, guys, for coming on today. I really, really appreciate your time. I'm excited to get this podcast up and share out there because I know that you guys will be able to help a lot of people.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Gary. Definitely.
Thanks so much for watching today. If you'd like to learn more about SMC or the guests that you listen to, please visit us at smcnational.com.